recording consists of extracts from John Dawley's talks on Christian Science Practice, given in London in January 1950. These talks were based on and considered in detail the text of the chapter Christian Science Practice in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. In 1950, there were no tape recorders. These talks were recorded on wire, simply for the purpose of publishing a book on this subject. This, of course, was done, and John Dawley's book, Christian Science Practice, is the result. It is published by the Foundational Book Company and is available from their agents. Of all his original reels, only two are still in existence. And as trustee of John Dawley's works, I felt I'd like to share this recording with those who have this book and who can therefore appreciate these extracts in their context. These particular selections, which on this cassette are separated from one another by a pause of several seconds, have been chosen because they are fairly complete in themselves and are of good enough quality to reproduce. Listeners should remember, though, that the original recording was on wire, transferred to tape, and now to a cassette, so the final result has lost some quality in this process. Should any listener try to follow these extracts from the text of the book, they will discover that the text is, of course, an edited version, and where they find certain changes, it's because there were two sessions of these same talks, each extending over a whole week. Full notes were taken of one and a recording of the other, and the final text of the book made use of both records. This explains why there are some additions to the printed text and some material transposed. One realizes that these few extracts could not possibly be representative of the whole of John Dawley's work as a pioneer in the science of Christian Science. One also realizes that this recording doesn't add anything in textual matter that is not already in the book, nor do these few extracts underline the compelling spiritual structure of this chapter on Christian Science Practice, which is fully given in his book. But the spoken word does seem to convey something of the atmosphere, the living spirit of the dynamic truth, and also the warmth of these occasions. And for this reason, I felt I'd like to share this recording.
When you conceive of an idea of God, and you let that idea operate in your thinking, it isn't the power of your thought that is power, it's the power of the idea. And so when you allow yourself to become a tool for the carnal mind, the diabolism in that thing that is operating in your mind is not in your thinking. The diabolism is in the carnal mind. Now the carnal mind can think a whole lot of evil worse than you can think. A whole lot of evil worse than you can think. What you can think about evil is child's play to what the carnal mind can think. As Jesus said, your adversary the devil, as a roaring lion, goeth about seeking whom he may devour. And so, when you allow yourself to become a tool for malicious animal magnetism, hate and jealousy and envy and self-seeking and pique and annoyance with people and all that, you're just becoming a tool for malicious animal magnetism. And whatever you've got to face the fact that it is diabolism operating in your thought. It's just diabolism operating in your thought. The fact of the matter is that every one of us has to come to the point where when anything is wrong, we ask ourselves, what's wrong with me? Not what's wrong with the other fellow. Because if you were at one with God, nothing would disturb you. Nothing in all the world would touch you. I shall be satisfied when I awaken in thy likeness. And I prove this. I prove this. You know the scorn that has been poured down upon me. And it hasn't touched me. I've got fat on it. Why? Because, not so fat. Because all the time I was trying to find my life hid with Christ in God. And it doesn't touch you. And if ever one of us would start quarreling with ourselves as mortals, we wouldn't spend quite so much time quarreling with the other one. We just wouldn't. And the world would be a lovely place. The world would be a lovely place. But of course, the great idea is that the other fellow did it. The other fellow doesn't appreciate you. He doesn't understand you. He said this and he said that and he said the other and this, that and the other. And the truth of the matter is that sooner or later, every one of us has got to find the kingdom of God within us. Every single one of us. In spite of all the hell that is going on around you, 1,000 shall fall at thy side and 10,000 at thy right hand, but shall not come nigh thee. Because you are dwelling in the secret place of the Most High. And remember, this thing is scientific. It isn't just words. It's power. It's being. It's entity. It's scientific. And so, we don't have to suffer anything. You don't suppose that Jesus would have had to go on the cross if he didn't want to. Jesus went on the cross willingly and gladly to prove to men the superiority of the spiritual over the material. All this business that they crucified Jesus. Of course, animal magnetism claimed that it crucified Jesus. But Jesus willingly allowed it. He said, if I pray my Father, he'll send me a legion of angels. Jesus didn't have to be crucified at all. He allowed himself to be crucified. And the belief that Jesus was crucified with hate and jealousy and envy and all that kind of thing robs it of the beauty of the thing. He willingly said to them, you think that the material man is the real man. Well, take it and crucify it. And I'll prove to you that the spiritual man is the real man. Look at the love of it. Look at the power of it, the consciousness of it, you see. And he did it to perfection. He did it to perfection. And so you need. We can dwell, though I make my bed in hell, behold, out there. And you and I can dwell in the secret place of the Most High. Nothing can touch us. Not anything. You can walk with God. You can walk with God. Now, I know this. I've proved it. You can walk with God, and all the hate and the malice and the criticism and the condemnation won't touch you. It'll come. It'll come. You can't avoid that. But don't take it in. Don't take it in. Don't take in anything but that which is born of God. And you'll have a life of peace and happiness, and you'll turn a lot of your enemies into your friends. Someday, there is going to come to us such a sense of the nature of divine love, what love really is. And there is going to come to us such a sense that love always has a Christ, a divine plan, an infinite plan, an infinite design, and that Christ is always working on behalf of mankind and never against. And there's going to come to us such a sense of the very nearness and dearness, the science and system of divine love, that we're going to lose all our fear and all our pride and everything of the kind. And there's going to be a new era. We're going to wait to hear God speak. And that's going to be the whole purpose of our mission. Now, someday we're going to see that love has a Christ, and that Christ is truth. It's ever-present truth, and that ever-present truth comes to us through spiritual desire, through spiritual understanding, through an understanding of the nature of God. And I tell you, there's going to be a new era. Malpractice is one of the beliefs of the carnal mind. As a mortal, you have all the elements of the carnal mind in your makeup. Remember, we're not dealing with your thinking. We're dealing with the carnal mind. The carnal mind says that there is such a thing as hate, malpractice, beastness, jealousy, envy, and that it affects every mortal, whether you know it or whether you don't know it. Unless you take care of it through Christ's truth, it'll affect you, naturally. Because you are, as a mortal, are just an offshoot of the carnal mind. If you weren't, you wouldn't be here in the flesh. You know, the woman that went to Mr. Kemmelden told him once that she'd been healed of everything but corns. And he said, well, for goodness sake, don't get healed of your corns, because we don't want to lose you yet. The claim of the carnal mind is that you're an offshoot of the carnal mind as a mortal. And all the beliefs of the carnal mind go to make up the mortal body. And you've got to meet it with truth. Whether you know it or whether you don't, ignorance is no protection. Ignorance of a thing is no protection at all. The only protection to any situation is the mind of Christ. And the sooner mankind finds that out, the better, the healthier for them. I here present to my readers an allegory illustrative of the law of divine mind and of the supposed laws of matter and hygiene, an allegory in which the plea of Christian science heals the sick. Suppose a mental case to be on trial. If you want to be a Christian science practitioner, always regard it as a mental case. It's always some lie of the carnal mind. Whether it's a liver complaint, or a cancer, or a broken leg, or whatever it may be, it's always a lie of the carnal mind. Some lie about, every lie, of course, is a lie about God. Every lie is a lie about God. It's either a lie about mind, or a lie about spirit, or a lie about soul, or a lie about principle, or a lie about life, or a lie about truth, or a lie about love. It's always a lie about God. Always. And so you deal with those lies through an understanding of God. Suppose a mental case to be on trial, as cases are tried in court. A man is charged with having committed liver complaint. The patient feels ill, ruminates, and the trial commences. Personal sense is the plaintiff. Personal sense. Personal sense is the belief that each one of us has a little personality of his own, and that the way he thinks is through personal sense, that all our interests are divided. We have a little personal corporeality of our own, of which at first we're very proud, and then after a while we're not so proud of it. After a while it doesn't look so good, and so we're not so proud of it. It's all personal sense, the belief that of life, substance, and intelligence in matter. The next witness is called. Now you get the sense from false law of impurity, which is the opposite of spirit, disorder. I am coated tongue. I am covered with a foul fur placed on me the night of the liver attack. Morbid secretion hypnotized the prisoner and took control of his mind, making him despondent. Has that ever happened to you? Boy. That morbid secretion that is supposed to be, something happens. You don't know what it is. You get a letter. Somebody makes some remark to you that upsets you. When morbid secretion comes in, you begin to worry. And morbid secretion comes in. And the first thing you know, you're thoroughly poisoned. You're thoroughly poisoned with morbid secretion. Where did it come from? Out of the common mind. Very often I find in analyzing, and I have a habit, whenever I find myself a little disturbed in any way, I sit down, I say to myself, now John, what's the trouble? What's the trouble? What is it? Where did it come from? And I can always trace it to its source. And I see that it's some stupid remark or some stupid incident or something in a letter or something. Not that I don't know when I've received an unpleasant letter. I get barrels and barrels and barrels of lovely letters, wonderful letters. But sometimes, perhaps a patient isn't as well as I'd like them to be. And a little cloud comes over my thought. And then you begin to get morbid. And you let in morbid secretion, which is just worry, that's all it is. And the root of it really is fear. The root of it is fear. And then the first thing you find, you're all poisoned up. Now, where did it come from? Sometimes the incident that seems to have caused it is of no moment whatever, and sometimes you've got a mistaken sense of something. There isn't an incident anyhow. So your morbid secretion has come from nowhere, then. Sometimes you imagine that a condition is something that it isn't. And so you begin to be morbid over it. You worry over it. And then you get morbid secretion poisoning you. And then after a while you find out the condition isn't that way at all. Now where did it all come from? Delusion. Delusion, that's all. Just delusion. And that's all the common mind is. It's just delusion. It's something that is arguing all the time that God isn't God. And man isn't God's idea, all the time. I've been asked if I thought, because we symbolize the ideas of God by music and mathematics, if I thought that these things were truly scientific. Certainly not. There's only one thing scientific, that's divine science. No human science could be absolutely pure science. You know, I've taught you that. I've said that to you a thousand times. There's nothing purely scientific but the ideas of God. Nothing in all the world. You know, I'm out on mathematics and music. I've recently been told I know nothing about them, that my mathematics are no good and my music's worse. And as I told you the other day, I thought the only symbol I could take to now was cooking. That's about all that I could take to now. There is nothing absolute but the divine. Nothing in all the world absolute but the divine. I read a little pamphlet today by a well-known thinker, very well-known thinker in Great Britain, and he says the chances are 5 to 1 that in the next 15, 20 years we'll all be burnt to a cinder. The chances are 5 to 1. And another gentleman tells us that a pound of poison that they have now will kill off everybody on the globe. 1 pound of poison will kill off everybody on the globe. And then they call that scientific. Nothing could be scientific unless it was infinite. Only things that can be absolutely scientific and always the same are the things of infinity. Now we use the symbols of mathematics and music, and you know Mazzetti uses them, for the same reason that the prophets used the symbols of the Chaldees. People knew them. That's all. That's the reason that you use them. Wise men don't try to formulate new symbols that are unknown to other people. They try to use the symbols that those people knew, but lift them onto a higher basis. And all those symbols, the symbols of physical science, the symbols of music, mathematics, engineering, anything you like, we can use them as our figures of speech, but that's all. Just as our figures of speech. Nothing in all the world is pure science but the divine idea. Nothing could be. Thing that governs man is the rules man is the rule of infinite soul and the rule of infinite spiritual sense, And the rule of soul is that man is forever identified with divine light, truth, and love. That's the rule of soul. The invariable, irresistible rule of soul is that from everlasting to everlasting, man is incorporeal. He's not bodily, he's incorporeal, he's idea. That idea is everywhere, couldn't be in a finite body. Man is the likeness of infinity. You couldn't put him in a finite body. And you talk about claustrophobia. Gosh, you ought to be scared when you find all you are is in this thing. You ought to have the worst kind of claustrophobia when you find that you're in this thing. And just in this thing, shut up in it. But the rule of soul is that the rule of soul is that it is forever translating the objects of sense into the ideas of soul. That every idea is forever identified with divine principle, life, truth, and love. That man is sinless. That he's incorporeal. That he's calm. The calm of soul. The beauty of soul. That he has the joy and the bliss and the freedom of soul. The rule of soul is that man is never in anything but God. He's never in anything but infinite mind, infinite spirit, infinite soul, infinite principle, infinite life, truth, and love. That he lives in the realm of infinite safety, infinite sanctity, infinite satisfaction, infinite salvation. That's the rule of soul. It's the most wonderful, wonderful thing. Of course, it's the term for God that Miss Eddie uses least, soul. And Mr. Bickleyong once told me that he asked Miss Eddie why she uses least. And she said, well, it's such a difficult term. The meaning of soul is so difficult to lay hold of humanly that it's a difficult term to explain because the meaning is so dainty. It's so so above sense. When I think about principle, I always know that principle is the complete and perfect demonstration of omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and omniactive life, truth, and love. And that in it, animal magnetism, either as ignorant or malicious, has never operated. So if you know as an idea of God that you're included in principle, in this omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and omniactive light, truth, and love, eternally demonstrated, eternally proved and demonstrated, as principle does, then you realize that animal magnetism never entered that realm, then you can't be touched by it. You just can't be touched by it. This is lovely. Ah, but Christ, truth. The Christ is all that God knows. If you could take everything that mathematics knows or could know, the whole design of mathematics into one ideal, you've got your Christ. That's your Christ. Everything that expresses God in one ideal is Christ. Jesus demonstrated that Christ perfectly. He demonstrated the ideal to perfection. He's the only one who has. He demonstrated it absolutely to perfection. But Christ is all and in all, because Christ is God's own ideal of himself. Mind is conscious of itself. It has infinite ideas of itself, all gathered into one ideal. If it didn't have an ideal, it couldn't have ideas. Ideas arise out of an ideal. And so all of these ideas gathered in, all of God's ideas gathered into one ideal, known, and that ideal is known as a whole only to God. The infinite alone can know its own ideal as a whole. You and I can't even know the whole about mathematics or music. We can't even know the whole about ourselves. We never will. If you ever knew the whole about yourself, you'd be God. Nothing knows the whole but God, the infinite. But we will know more and more and more and more. Infinite progression is concrete being. And from everlasting to everlasting, the beauty of holiness in yourself and in every other idea will be unfolding to you. If you ever came to the end of that, you'd be at the jumping off point, and it wouldn't be infinity. it wouldn't be infinity. And so, ah, but Christ, truth, the spirit of life, and the friend of mortal man. Christ is the friend of mortal man, because Christ is the only thing that can deliver mortal man from himself. Christ is the savior of mortal man. He's the friend of mortal man. Can open wide those prison doors and set the captive free. The problem that we face now in the world today is this. Is the carnal mind going to explode itself? Is it going to explode itself? Or is it going to become so beastly that nobody wants it? Is it going to explode itself, which is no good to anybody? Or are men and women going to have enough of the mind of Christ to bind it, to enter into the strong man's house and bind him and then spoil his goods? That's the question in the world today. Has the carnal mind risen to its zenith of claim to power and substance and being, to the point when it's going to explode itself with the most awful calamity and convince mortals at last that there isn't anything in mortality that's worth having? That's the picture. That's the picture. It's a swinish element of human nature rushing down the hill to its own destruction. Rushing down the hill to its own destruction. With the case of the demoniac, Jesus saved the situation. Let the swinish element of human nature rush on to its own destruction, but don't let it touch humanity. Jesus saved the man, the demoniac. He saved the demoniac. And so if we have the mind of Christ today in this world of ours, we'll save the situation. If we haven't the mind of Christ, all that's going to happen is that inevitably, either through suffering or through science, mankind must be convinced that there isn't anything true but the spiritual. It's either going to happen through science or through suffering. If humanity have enough of the mind of Christ, of the fruit of the Spirit, enough of the fruit of the Spirit, they'll save the situation. If they haven't, they'll learn through suffering, as humanity has learned time and time again. Only as the carnal mind urges its claim more and more and more, the suffering, as you've seen in our own experience, is going to be greater. That's the problem face to face with us. And that's why we can't afford to be fritterers with this thing. You know, I don't know how to show you that a grain of truth does wonders to mortals. I don't know how I ever healed the sick when I began in the practice of Christian Science. I didn't know any of these things. I don't know how I ever healed the sick. And it was only just religious earnestness that was all. And a grain of truth will do wonders for mortals. But you know as well as I do that the time has come in our movement when the healing isn't what it should be. Today, the claim of the carnal mind is scientifically organized on a human basis, so-called scientifically organized, the education of the coming generation on a human basis is from what they call a scientific basis. The education of the coming generation. They're told, if you don't understand anything, don't believe it. And if you can't prove it, don't believe it. In a way, it's a good thing, but if you put it into the material, of course, it becomes highly dangerous. And so today, if we are going to deal with the so-called carnal mind in the age in which we live, it's got to be done scientifically. Nothing else will do it. It's got to be done scientifically. We must have an understanding of the ideas of God operating in the realm of science and system that is a billion times more definite than mortal minds' beliefs. Mortal minds' beliefs can't be definite anyhow, but they think they are. They think they are. And so it's a new era. It's a new era. Now, we'll never heal until we understand God as principle. That's the name for God that includes all other names. Principle gives the sense that God is one. That there is one infinite one over all and in all and through all. That one is forever demonstrating itself, proving itself. It's foundational. It's basic. The nature of that one is life, it's truth, and it's love. And that one translates itself as soul, reflects itself as spirit, and manifests itself as mind. But the principle includes all other terms for God. It's the axis of which other, the life, truth, love is the essential nature of God. The soul, spirit, and mind is the way that essential nature is made manifest. And you get your principle, which always works according to science. Everything to do with science has to do with principle. It works according to science and all that that term means in its purest sense. It works according to system. Without system, you can't work. So divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the age in which we live. And this has been the effort of the writers of the scriptures from the time the scriptures started. There's only one cause. There's only one creator. It's mind. It creates ideas. It's spirit. Those ideas must be spiritual. It's soul. Those ideas must be sinless and incorporeal. It's principle. Those ideas must be founded and based and established and demonstrated. It's life. Those ideas must be eternal. It's truth. Those ideas must be conscious ideas of the nature of manhood. It's love. Those ideas must be perfect and complete. And there's only that one cause going on. Now, it makes the mortal feel pretty good if he can say, well, ye shall be as gods. That's a lie. The truth is, ye shall be as God. That's the truth. Not ye shall be as gods, but ye shall be as God. Ye shall be as mind. Spirit, as soul, as principle, as life, as truth, love. Man has no power to do wrong. It's the lie of the carnal mind that man has power to do wrong. Man has no power to do wrong. There's one thing you can never do. You can never get outside of God, because God is the infinite. That you can never do. You may dream that you do it. You may be fooled that you do it by the carnal mind, but you can't do it. And remember this, that if you are day by day seeking the Christ idea, then every day you are knowing more and more about reality, about what we call heaven. Then every day you are knowing less and less about hell. And from the time that you put your hand to the plow of spiritual reality, and you begin to press forward, from that time you're going to know less and less of evil. Well, now really, we haven't had such a bad time in the past. Not such a bad time. So look at the bright future before us. 1,000 shall fall at thy side, and 10,000 at thy right hand. But it shall not come near thee, it shall not come nigh thee. And if you take the plow, so you put your hand to the plow of spirit, and you begin to order your ways and your goings, and you begin to lift up spiritual things, from the moment you do that, you've known the worst hell you'll ever know. You've already known. the worse hell you live in. And you'll be going forward into a fuller and fuller sense, day in and day out, of spiritual reality, of the kingdom of God at hand and within you. And remember that man has no power to do evil. Man is God's idea. Be therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. And man has no power. How can man have power to do evil when God is good and God is infinite? It's a lie. And the claim of the serpent is this mingling that you have in all human systems, of medicine and theology and everything else. This is the veil that is drawn over the face of things. The veil that Jesus rent in twain when he proved the reality of spirit and the nothingness of matter. This is the veil. The attempt to mingle, this is the impurity of matter. The attempt to mingle spirit and matter, which is an impossibility. It simply can't be done. And it says, it's a whisper of the serpent. It says, ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. And what we want to say is, ye shall be as God, knowing spirit only, knowing good only. And then you're on a scientific basis. And of course, we just forget that the only power in all the world is divine love, and that man is God's idea. That the law of life and truth and love is forever operating irresistibly on behalf of mankind. And so, all that happens when somebody dies is that the error of the situation has destroyed itself. It doesn't destroy man. Can't destroy man. Man is God's idea. The error of the situation, the old toothless come out. And the error of the situation has destroyed itself. And man awakens to a new experience, and inevitably a better experience. Especially for anyone whose thinking is pressing forward. It must be a great relief to awaken and find that man can't die, that there is no death, that man simply cannot die. And from that point you start to learn that man can't sin, and man can't be sick, and man can't be old, and man can't live in matter, and man can't die. That's the lesson we've got to learn. That there is no mingling of good and evil, of spirit and matter. That spirit is the only reality, the only life is the life which is spirit. There is no other life. And I'm convinced that there are many of us sitting here today that will see the truth of that thing, if we would only get that wonderful sense that the one supreme thing that's going on in the world is divine love. Now I admit to you that humanly speaking it doesn't look that way, but that isn't true. That's the testimony of the five physical senses. But when a man awakens to the divine ever-presence, that man realizes that there's nothing going on in all the world but divine life, truth and love. And when he learns that scientifically and Christianly he can lay hold on that fact in pure science and system and divine order, and he can demonstrate that fact, then believe me, he's got something. He's got something. Then he arrives at the point that Jesus said, whither I go, ye know. And the way ye know, he taught them the way. You remember what Miseri says about Jesus? He says, in the simplicity and with such fidelity, we see Jesus ministering to the spiritual needs of all who place themselves under his care, always leading them into the divine order, into the divine order. Always leading them into the divine order. Under the sway of his own perfect understanding, his power over others was spiritual, not corporeal. To the students whom he had chosen, his immortal teaching was the bread of life. When he was with them, a fishing boat became a sanctuary, and the solitude was peopled with holy messages from the All-Father. The grove became his classroom, and nature's haunts were the Messiah's university. He was always leading them into the divine order, the order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, of the word Christ, Christianity, and science, blending, 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 that order that permeates the Bible, that starts the Bible with the days of creation, and permeates the Bible in climaxes in the city foursquare, in the word Christ, Christianity, and science, in the city foursquare. And that city foursquare is what Abraham went out to seek. This city is used all through the Bible as a state of consciousness, as a symbol of a state of consciousness, and that's what Abraham went out to seek. Now just think of that, and think what would come to humanity if scientifically, persistently, on a most exalted basis, men and women day in and day out began to understand and utilize the facts of infinite, ever-present life and truth and love. Think what would come to humanity. Now, as that comes to you and it abides with you and it really becomes you, then if you go through a thing called sin, you'll be able to take that sin and put it aside. Because even if Jesus, it says, he was tempted like as we are, yet without sin. But he was tempted, like as we are, yet without sin. And you can take it and you can put it aside as one having authority. And just so with disease, the temptation to be sick will come to you, and you can take it again and put it aside. And so with death, the temptation of death will come to you. But always, that which you know of life, truth, and love, which is embedded in your own thinking and which is potential and dynamic, that will assert itself, whether you as a human being are conscious of it or not, making no difference whatever. I find constantly that something comes that would be wrong. It would be a wrong move. It would be a mistake. I'm not conscious of it at all. But the cultivation in my thinking that I have done of light, truth, and love operates to sidetrack that thing, and it never happens. And then afterwards I see that life, truth, and love have saved me from something. I would have made a mistake. I would have done something I shouldn't do. Don't you see, God's always going on. You don't have closer than breathing. Life, truth, and love are ever operative. And in the proportion that life, truth, and love are operative in your daily life and experience, it doesn't make any difference to you what comes, that life, truth, and love will operate. As I told you, traveling on that train between Toronto and Montreal, Toronto, the train jumped the track. The minute I felt the train jump the track, that thing that was in my thought asserted itself. Didn't have to wait a moment. Not a moment. That thing asserted itself. And so, as you cultivate in your life this understanding of God, and the Christ idea comes to you today through this calculus, this process of reasoning by symbols, and you take it in, and you love it, and you live it, and you understand it, and you prove it, I am convinced that that thing will be unutterably true. If a man keep my saying, he shall never see death. I've been a Christian Scientist 47 years, and I've seen a whole lot of sin and rottenness, and a whole lot of disease or temptation to disease, and a whole lot of what would be called death, materiality, go out of my life without my knowing it. Yes, without my knowing it. Why? Because for 47 years, in an immature way, I've been trying to lay hold on the ideas of life, truth, and love. And as you try to lay hold on those ideas of life, truth, and love, however faintly you do it, if you're in earnest, when the time comes, those ideas operate on your behalf. Dwell in the consciousness of life, of truth, and of love. And as you understand that that life, truth, and love is principle, it demonstrates itself. It's the only, the one. It's foundational. It's basic. It's that which always demonstrates itself. It's that which operates according to science and system. And as you gain that sense, all that is unlike life, truth, and love will pass out of your experience. And you'll be a new man.